Hi, this is Dave Bushong, and welcome to 99hobbies.com.
Welcome to 99hobbies.com. Today we're talking to someone who got his ham license at the age of 9, and now in his 30s, reflecting back on how it affected his life growing up being a ham operator.
Hey, I've got a special interview going on. Somebody who's very close to home, my son Brent. Hi, Brent. How you doing?
Hey, Dad. I'm doing well. Thank you.
We were talking about ham radio, and first of all, tell me how old you are, and tell me how long you've been a ham.
Well, I'm 32 years old, and I've been a ham since I was 9. So, unless my math is off, I think that puts me at 32 years, right?
You actually can be a member of the Old Timers Club when you've been a ham for 25 years. Are you looking forward to that?
I am, actually. And we've talked about that before, you and I, but there's something neat about being involved in anything for any length of time, and certainly with as much as you and I moved around growing up, it's cool to have something that's as consistent as ham radio, especially when it's a hobby that changes as much as it does. It's kind of neat to be a part of it for that length of time.
Yeah, it's really something to think about. When you and I first started doing ham radio, it was Morse code and sideband, and then packet came into the picture, and since you've gone off and made a life for yourself, I've been playing with SSTV and doing this website here, which really has nothing to do directly with ham radio, but it has everything to do with ham radio as far as what people are doing. I've been having a blast. How about you?
Well, you know, I certainly haven't gotten as advanced as you have. I still remember shopping around the Deerfield Ham Fest when there was Bill McGann, and we used to buy straight keys for $1.50. They'd be in big boxes. But I think there's a sense of pride that I have just watching the basic ham operator in the news and online. You see the reports of these guys working not only things like the Boston Marathon, but certainly disasters. And I remember you telling me when I was a kid how excited you were to be able to help during the Mexico City earthquake, and it just doesn't stop. However the method of transmission or interaction is between hams, it is definitely one of those things that you don't hear enough about it, and when you do, there's a swelling sense of pride, so it's neat to see it move forward.
Well, it's funny. I was concerned about thinking that you might turn into a geek because, you know, we were always talking about radios and computers and all this stuff while you were growing up. Do you think that really impacted your development, or do you think you're okay because of that?
Well, I think I'm okay, but you and I both know that my younger brother, Billy, kind of took the geek mantle. He really excelled at all things electronic. But you know, I mentioned this on 99 Hobbies too. There's an intellect involved in amateur radio, and certainly I think there's an intellect involved with being a geek. The ability to copy Morse code at the age of 9, you know, you're learning another language. And it's the idea of listening and receiving and translating. You know, when I joined the Marine Corps, there was a test that they give out called the Defensive Language Aptitude, or the Defense Language Aptitude Battery. And one of the things they do is they send you Morse code at about 15 words a minute, and they're the characters E, T, A, and I think E. And so they're banging out this code at 15 words a minute, and the guys around me are just scrambling to remember it. And I'm taking a nap and, you know, writing with my foot. But, you know, I also have, you know, come to the point where I speak other languages now because of that development early on, and I certainly don't have a problem talking to new people. I never have. That's also certainly attributable to ham radio. So there are a lot of things that have benefited me, you know, since I was a kid, that come directly from amateur radio. There's no doubt about it, and I'm sure that I'm a closet geek. I think, you know, playing chess over the air with some of our friends when I was a kid has forced the tag on me, but for the most part, I think I turned out okay.
Well, yeah, you turned out okay, and one of the things that I was involved in a conversation yesterday about, most Americans are more afraid of speaking in front of a crowd than they are of actually dying, and you know, my kids aren't afraid of talking in front of a crowd because they've had a microphone in front of their face the whole time.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true. had a compliment paid to me by someone that I respect very much, a boss of mine at a last property I worked on, and he said that when he interviewed me, one of the things about me that he was so excited about was the fact that I talked to him as though I had known him for years and years and years, and that made him very comfortable. You know, when you listen to hams on the air talking to one another, even in contests, how funny is it that these two people may and probably won't ever see each other ever, but they always have time to say, hey, thanks so much for the contact, thanks so much for the new county, thanks so much for whatever. Yeah, this is arbitrary and will absolutely not change anything in the world, but the friendship and the ability to have a conversation with someone over, as the rules themselves say, you know, matters of relative unimportance, it's a blast, you know?
I know what you mean. When I was in junior high school, my worst subject was geography and social studies, whatever they call it. And I got my license when I was in seventh grade. And then I started actually talking to these places. My whole opinion of the world changed at that point. Did you have a similar kind of experience?
It's funny that you mentioned that. I don't know how well you remember my seventh grade year, but I had a geography teacher named Mr. Potosak, and I think...
Oh, yeah, I remember Steve. Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, Steve, who called you what?
He called me Mr. Bushong.
Yeah, Mr. Bushong, and then Sir after that. Yeah.
10 years older than him.
Exactly. Well, we would he had this thing at the beginning of class where, being a geography teacher, of course, he wants to let his kids know that he knows what he's talking about. So he would say at the beginning of class, if anybody in class... You know, the class had to vote and pick a student to pick a country, and if he couldn't find the country on the world map that we had, you know, remember the ones that you pull down out of the scroll, like over the chalkboard?
Okay, yeah.
Well, he'd pull that down and say, "Okay, who's going to name a country today?" And I started picking things off the maps that you and I had in the ham shack. You know, I really look, and back before Rwanda was known for the garbage that goes on over there, or Djibouti, or all these countries. You know, I'd be naming them because I not only knew where they were, but, you know, what the prefixes were for those countries, and, you know, whether or not it was a multiplier or, you know, that kind of
thing. Whether it was a multiplier, that's funny.
It got to the point where I got barred from being the person chosen because we had so much free time because we were just racking up the points because we couldn't find any of them. I wasn't allowed to pick countries anymore, but certainly, you know, geography and Even to a point, some of that electronics theory, those things certainly helped in the military. But, you know, when they talk about giving high school kids those tests and they can't find North America, well, I fortunately don't fall into that statistic.
Yeah. I was thinking about the time that I went to your school there and set up a vertical, pounded into the ground outside, and set up the radio.
Just running the cable from the antenna inside the class window.
Yeah, and do you remember who we talked to?
You know, I seem to remember it being South America, but I don't remember. Was it Colombia?
Well, we actually did. We did talk to Colombia and a W5 in Texas, and then this guy in Sri Lanka called me.
Right, Sri Lanka, that's right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was the first time I had ever worked that country, and I asked one of the kids there to, can you find that on the map? Because, you know, personally, I'm thinking... because I don't know where it is. They used to call it Ceylon.
Ceylon, right.
And I didn't know where this guy's call sign was from, so it was a learning experience for everybody.
Sure.
I ended up doing that actually for 3 or 4 years after you graduated from his class, and
right.
we had as much fun every year that we did that.
Well, there's a sense of discovery that I don't think gets old for anybody, no matter how old they are. I mean, you think about how exciting it is to learn something new, and unless you lack, you know, any ambition at all, learning something new is fun. And I remember my first DX contact, in fact, I think one of my first contacts after I got my license, and we lived in Nashua, New Hampshire, was with Bolivia. And I remember it was in code, because I had my novice license, and that's the only thing we could really do
back in the day,
and I was freaking out because I was so excited that I could barely copy the stuff this guy was sending to me, and I think you had laid down for a nap, and I came up, and I banged on the door, and I was just dying for you to get down there, and came down and finished the contact, but it was kind of fuzzy. And then I got my QSL card about a month later from Bolivia, and I just about wet my pants. I carried that thing around. Oh boy! So you know, from that all the way up to these days, when you learn something new, or you, I mean, even if you were to find another province or country or city in a country, or it's so exciting. I can't imagine that ever gets old.
Oh no, I know exactly what you're talking about. I remember my first one when I was in seventh grade. It was an antenna that my dad and I had built from a diagram from some apparently accurate book. It was the antenna book or something that one of his friends from work had given him. We made a 15-meter beam, mm-hmm. and we put everything up there, and I talked to a guy in Venezuela, and I remember his call sign is YV5JH. It was my first DX contact, and I thought, oh my God, I'm talking. You know, before that, I'd been talking to my friend in Los Angeles when we lived in San Diego, so it was like 90 miles or something, but here's a guy from another continent, and we're having a QSO. It was a wonderful thing.
One of the most interesting things to me is how there is this family kind of tinge to every ham operator in the world, and it doesn't matter if it's, you know, somebody who just got into it or somebody who's been into it all their life.
Yeah,
or
it's like a fraternity, yeah.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, one of the stories that I was thinking of was I was actually in Southern Virginia.
Wait, now you have a story? You have ham stories?
I know, I'm sorry. I know it's unique.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I know. I was in Southern Virginia, and I was going to a Best Buy to, you know, I don't even buy a CD, I don't even know. And I go by this this Volkswagen van, and it's got, I mean, it looks like W1AW. There are so many antennas on this thing, and I think to myself, that's got to be a ham operator. Sure enough, I get closer, and, you know, he's got a vanity plate with his call on it. So I go up, and I find out what he's doing, and it turns out that his son is 12, and he just got licensed, and they're out there just playing around just for the heck of it, setting up different kinds of antennas, you know, sticking them in the ground just to see what'll happen, and they're making contacts all over the country. Now, I ended up talking to this guy for about an hour and a half. His son was all fired up about the fact that he's met somebody else who had his license when he was young, and that it's not a dead-end street. It's okay if the kids at school don't know where your DX contact was. You know, you're growing up with other people around. He can still go play ball with the kids if he wants, but it's an introduction to the adult world, and you become very comfortable with it. But aside from that, here's this guy I've never seen before. I probably won't ever see again because I unfortunately lost his card. But I talked to him for 90 minutes, just about nothing.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
When you were telling that story, it reminded me of another story, and we're just about to run out of time, so I'd like you to tell this story, and then we're going to wrap it up, but I think that we'll have to do one of these again. Have you ever been doing a field day and had a hang glider give you his keys?
Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to bring that up. You know, that I think that's probably one of the most extraordinary stories I've ever heard. And
please tell the story, and I'll tell our listeners ahead of time that this really did happen. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, we were working field day at the top of Mount Ascutney in Vermont. And, you know, one of the rules they have there is that when the sun goes down, you also need to go down. So we had been working since dew on the grass. I mean, we were up there really early. And we worked the heck out of the contest. In fact, I think we finished pretty high based on our... We were, what, 3 Charlie, is that right?
Yeah, that was actually... that was a really good one.
Yeah. And people were dying to get us. We had lines, and we were exhausted. But we had a blast, and we finished up. We're packing up. We had the we're using the car as an anchor on the antenna. We rolled it on the base there, and packed up. We were getting ready to leave, and a couple guys had just pulled up in their truck. It was a Toyota 4Runner, and pulling out all their equipment, and they're getting ready to hang glide. So we made our little comments about how cool that was, and just as we were leaving, the one guy walks up and hands me his car keys and says, "Hey, would you mind driving my car to the base of the mountain, because, you know, we're getting ready to jump off the cliff here and we can't take the car." You know, so I waited to find out if their, you know, cameras were going to come out and what the joke was, but he was dead serious. So I got into his car and you know, we made the 20-minute drive to the bottom of the mountain. I parked it and never saw the guy again.
And we assume that he picked up his truck.
Oh, I kept the keys. I mean, I'm sure he found a way in.
Oh, good. That's nice.
And, yeah, we it's the auxiliary story. It doesn't really have anything to do with ham radio, but it's just another one of the stories that plugs into the life of the ham, I guess.
Yeah, we actually stopped by his house on the way home. All right, Brent. Brent Bushong, KA1NHG. Thanks for being on 99 Hobbies. It's been a lot of fun, and personally for me, it's been a real treat. And maybe, you know what, we ought to talk again sometime about some of your horror stories about growing up. What do you think?
I'd like that, Dad. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, 73.
73, Dad.